Hi, this is your host, Lori Moylove with The Limitless Podcast, and today I have Claudia Kagan. Claudia is a five-time Emmy Award-winning television producer, and having started her career on the performance side of the business as a production singer and personal assistant, she's traveled all over the world with her sister, Melissa Manchester, until she made the transition to television production. Early in your TV career, you were a talent executive on the Arsenio Hall show, where besides booking TV and theater stars, you also booked classic and upcoming comedians on the 90s, including Margaret Cho, Chris Rock, Chris Tucker, Martin Lawrence, Ellen DeGeneres, Rosie O'Donnell, Howie Mandel, Jerry Seinfeld, George Wallace, Leah DeLaria, and so many more. One of the most career highlights you had on that show was when you got to book the then governor, Bill Clinton, who played some Elvis classics with the posse on his sax and talked to Arsenio about his aspirations to be president of the United States. How amazing is that? You worked as a producer on Extra, Entertainment Tonight, Politically Incorrect, Hollywood Squares, and numerous specials before an 8-year run at E! News as a senior segment producer. You left E! To then go back with Arsenio. He asked you to join his team to return to late night television, where you booked more stars. Then you returned to Entertainment Tonight as a supervising producer and special projects and good works in 2016. And now you're proud to have won some Emmys for Outstanding Entertainment News Program in 2017, 2018, 2020, 2021, and also 2022. I don't know, like, you're just a phenomenon here, Claudia. And like, you exude creativity. Your start was in creative, you know, as a singer with your sister. And I'm sure even before that, I guess, what was the catalyst to get into entertainment and be surrounded by so many amazing creatives and also be a creative yourself?
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's great to see you, Lori.
Likewise.
It's been a while. Lori and I worked together at the Arsenio Hall show.
Right.
So it's wonderful to see you again. And yes, and he's still out there doing stand-up and he's great, and it's wonderful to see him once in a while. I'll give you a little background where the creativity came from and where it started. I grew up in the Bronx, New York, and my father was a musician, a bassoonist with the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. No. My mom was a clothing designer and manufacturer. She was a pioneer on 7th Avenue, owning one of the first female owned and operated clothing companies in the Garment Center.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
And so our house was always filled with opera singers and ballet dancers and designers and creative people. And those were our friends and those were our family. And even our extended family were violinists and French horn players and fine artists. But that was just the people in our house. And we lived in a emerging middle-class neighborhood in the Bronx in a nice apartment. We had a step-down living room, and that was pretty fancy. But it wasn't fancy at all. We lived right underneath the elevated trains, and we got used to the sound of the trains coming by. We didn't stop a conversation. It was just part of our lives. And But the curious part was that Pop was always home during the day because he went to work at night at the opera. So he was able to teach all the kids how to ride their bikes during the day because their fathers came home late. And the little girls in the building used to line up in our kitchen and Mom used to cut their bangs. And everybody, I was thinking about this. Everybody knew when my mom was ironing in the kitchen because they would hear her singing very loud because she hated ironing.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of the music of our lives, that Pop was practicing his bassoon in the bedroom and he was making reeds in the bedroom. But then he would go out and teach the kids how to ride bikes. And the earliest memory that I have of going to an orchestra concert. I was 2.5. Wow. And Pop played in an organization called the Little Orchestra Society, and they played in Carnegie Hall.
Wow.
And there's a picture somewhere in one of my photo albums of a tiny little girl in a little winter coat with leggings and a hat to match. And we were going to that Little Orchestra Society concert. The interesting thing about growing up in the Bronx, our building was like our town. That was like our little village. We knew everybody. There were no locked doors. In the summertime, we were all up on the roof. We call that Tar Beach in New York City.
Wow.
And everybody knew each other's family and friends. But our family was kind of different. We went to the ballet. We went to museums. We went to the opera. We went to Broadway. I went to see a Broadway show for my 9th birthday and then went to Sardi's, which is a very famous restaurant in the theater district. When other people were going to ice cream parlors and picnics in the park, which we did too. But it was kind of an extraordinary childhood. My mom was a child of the Depression. They were very poor, 3 girls, and my grandmother and grandfather. My grandfather was ill, chronically ill, and it was a very hard life. So Mom determined that her girls were going to have a better life and a better opportunity and a chance to do whatever was in their heart. So we had the example of 2 extraordinarily talented artists, and our extended family, and our cousins, and our aunts and uncles. So it was kind of a different canvas for creating a life, you know?
Yeah.
So I started to take dance lessons when I was 8.
Wow.
I went on Saturday and I took ballet, tap, jazz, acrobatics, and something called personality. Imagine that I actually needed a personality class. I don't really think so at the time, but when I remember it, it's fascinating to me. And some of the kids that were in the class that who were a little bit older were already on Broadway. And that astonished me. Because when I went to see these Broadway shows and when I watched little girls on TV, I saw myself there. And when I was about 8 years old, somebody suggested to Mom that perhaps she should consider taking me to a modeling agency in Manhattan. So we went on the train, subway, and we went to this modeling agency and the gal said, well, you know, I think that she might have a chance. We took some pictures. And my career started as a model, but I was still going to PS 86. I didn't, you know, sometimes I would miss school, but I do remember that in the 4th grade, I had a national commercial that we knew when it was going to be on TV. So the teacher brought the TV we didn't have TVs on the wall at that time.
Yeah.
She brought the TV on a rolling table to the classroom so that the kids could watch Claudia Manchester in this commercial, which was
wow.
So that was amazing. And, and the amazing thing is that for years and years, I could not find this commercial. And one day I was sitting watching TV and I thought, I'm just going to try one more time. And thanks to the internet, I found it.
Wow.
And it's charming and it's an amazing memory. And so I was on a bunch of TV shows, daytime TV shows, fashion shows in hotels and print ads. You know, I just had my bathrooms they had the artwork rehung and they kind of glued the pictures to the wall because I wanted to get you some pictures. But there's a picture of me in a Corvette for a tire ad and there's another one for a TV ad. But I had a lot of fun until I was in 5th grade and Mom said, now you have to go to school all the time. So that was the end of my modeling career. So, but I went to junior high school and I did shows there. I was Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady, and it was an all girls junior high school. So my friend Marcy was Henry Higgins, and that was fabulous. And Marcy went to a place called the High School of Performing Arts in Manhattan. I didn't know anything about it. But I investigated and I auditioned for it. And I got into the High School of Performing Arts, which most everybody knows as the FAME school. And if you haven't seen FAME, it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
And please watch it because it is classic New York brilliance. You'll see a lot of familiar faces in the movie. Miss Debbie Allen and wonderful actors. Irene Cara, who sadly just passed away. It's a classic film. And I went to school there, and it's a pretty good idea of what our days were like in that extraordinary place where we all came together with like-minded kids. So that was an extraordinary experience. I was in the drama department, did plays. I was the Dormouse in the Pool of Tears in Alice in Wonderland for our senior project. And then I graduated from there and I went to Queens College because they had a great drama department and my folks couldn't afford to send me out of state or away to school. And so I took three trains and a bus from Manhattan. We moved to Manhattan, took three trains and a bus, and I went to Queens College and had a great time, did a lot of shows there. I was a drama theater major, which meant that I read plays and I acted in plays. And that was fabulous. And parenthetically, I had a great group of friends, and one of them introduced me to this fellow, and I wound up marrying him. And we got married when I was a senior in college. So I was going to school, going to Queens College, and trying to start another part of my life. So I was curious. It was interesting. But we had a lot of fun. I graduated a couple of years after we got married. We had our family, and I have twin daughters, and I was a child at the time. And it was overwhelming, just the idea that I was not only going to have a baby, I was going to have two babies. And mm-hmm. I remember saying to the doctor, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he said, well, you have to take them both home.
Wow.
So I did. And, and it was a great experience to figure out how to be a young mom. And we lived in this wonderful building on the Upper West Side, which is magic. And my folks lived in the same building, and my other family members lived in the same building, and people would just stop by and help out or not help out. And I walked them on Broadway, and that's how I made friends. One of my friends said, girl with the twins, wait, I want to talk to you. My friend has triplets. So that was amazing. Wow. And my girls are still friendly with her daughter who was in that carriage.
That's crazy.
That's like a lifetime.
Yeah.
So that was great. And Stephen was working for my mom in her manufacturing company. His grandmother passed away, and what stayed with him was that she told him not to have any regrets in your life. He had been working as a composer in jingles, doing jingles on Madison Avenue. And when the girls were born, he decided that he needed to have a more steady life. And so he went to work for my mom. And he helped build her business. He was national sales manager, and it was okay. But it wasn't his destiny.
Yeah.
And he called a friend in California and he asked for his advice. This is important and interesting for the listeners,
yeah.
I would say. And this friend, whose name is Artie Butler, who is still here in California and a lovely guy and a talented, brilliant composer arranger. The one piece of music that always comes to mind is that he wrote the arrangement for Janis Ian's At 17. And that is a classic, gives me the chills, a classic piece of music that will last forever. Mm-hmm. So he said, so Artie, what do you think? Should I move to California and try to be a composer and a whatever comes with that? And Artie said, you only have one question to answer. And Stephen said, what is that? And he said, what moving company should you use?
Wow.
So we had a garage sale, an estate sale, That's what they called it. In our apartment, we sold everything down to the wall-to-wall carpeting that I had only recently had installed. We sold all of our wedding gifts, all the beautiful silver that we received, just enough to make a big move. We spent 1 week in Los Angeles, where our friends lived. He was going to take us around for a week to find a place. In the first day, we found our apartment, which was extraordinary. A duplex apartment. Well, they call it a duplex. It's a really, in New York, we call it a two-family house. But it was a 2,700 square foot apartment. We opened the door, it was empty, and it just felt like a palace. And that was the first day that we came to look for places. So we said, we'll take it. It was more than what we were paying on the Upper West Side. And we had a budget. And when the guy, we said, how much will this be? And it was $50 more than our budget. And Stephen took my arm and he basically said, don't say a word. So we took the apartment and we went back home and we sold everything except for our bed and our grand piano and the girls' beds and some clothes and stuff. And the movers came, and movers came on a Friday. We were going to go to Fire Island and spend the weekend with my folks in Fire Island. And we thought we would be there until Tuesday. And on Sunday morning, the mover called and said, well, we're in Arizona. We're going to be there tomorrow. So that was shocking. My mom was like, oh, my God, no enough time to say goodbye.
Yeah.
But we did it, and we came to California. And that was the week before, that was in like the end of June. I'm not going to tell you the year, but we went to a July 4th party the next weekend and we met all friends through our friends. And Stephen's first job was on doing a pilot for the comedian Robert Klein, who is a legendary comedian who was our friend in New York. And Stephen had done some work with him. And just recently, very sadly, I don't know if you read, but Norman Steinberg, who wrote Blazing Saddles, he just passed away last week. And he was a dear friend of ours, too, and some other friends. And little by little, so Stephen's first job was doing this pilot for Robert Klein, and a young actor, his first job was on that pilot, and his name was Michael Keaton.
Wow.
And he had just changed his name because his real name is Michael Douglas, but there was already a Michael Douglas, so he had to change to Michael Keaton. Wow. And he was wonderful. It was a very talented, brilliant cast of young actors, comedians, improv, brilliant people. Didn't get sold, but we had a lot of fun. And then he did a whole bunch of other things. And I was just taking care of the children. But the landlord, the gal who lived in our duplex, she said to me, can you cook? And I said, yeah. Why do you ask? She said, well, I had a catering company before my boys were born. She had two little boys. And I'm thinking I should do it again. And I said, so where would we do this? He said, she's right here. You cook in your kitchen. I'll cook in my kitchen. So we cooked for TV shows. We cooked for shows in studios. We cooked for shows on location. We did weddings. We did parties. And it was kind of fun because she had little ones and I had little ones. We were always home by 3 o'clock so that we were only away when they were in school. And it was a different kind of time. It was a very mellow time. It was not dangerous. It was peaceful. And we lived near Hancock Park in Los Angeles, which is a beautiful neighborhood. My girls went to an elementary school where the children sat on picnic benches outside their classroom to have lunch. And in New York City, we had to put a lock on the gate so people wouldn't come into the building without permission.
Yeah.
You know, so that was that. And then that ended and we moved. Then one day I went over to my sister's house. She already lived here. When we moved here, she already lived here because she was having success with her singing. Mm-hmm. Her first hit was Midnight Blue, by the way, a very famous song. And this is her 50th year as a performing artist.
Wow.
Yes.
That's awesome. So she must be doing something big for the 50th.
Well, you'll have to keep paying attention to this year because some wonderful things will be happening. She's still on tour. She's been on tour, been on the road all this time. She just did a wonderful concert in New York at Cooper Union, a celebration of women, where she sang a couple of her hits, and then she did a concert in Queens, as a matter of fact. And she travels all over and does concerts, and I'm always very proud of her. So, yeah. And she, when I was a little girl, she's littler, younger than me. And she used to sit in the middle of my grandmother's living room and with her party dress and with her hands out like this. And they would put on show music and she would sing along when she was like 4 years old.
That's amazing.
Mom had a friend who was a gypsy and she read Melissa's poem when she was born, and she told her she's going to be a star.
That's amazing.
And we believe that. We believe in that. So anyway, so I went to her house one day here in Hollywood. She was on the phone and she was like this. Oh, hi, Dick. How are you? Nice to talk to you. Oh, a TV show? Yeah. When would that be? Next Wednesday? Next Wednesday. Okay. You want me to sing two songs? Okay. And bring my band and my singers? Okay. Well, this sounds great, Dick. And I'll see you then. And we'll get all the information before that. And thanks so much for the invitation. Great talking to you. Bye-bye. And that was Dick Clark. And he had a show called Live Wednesday. It was a live variety show. So Melissa hung up the phone and she said, well, she was in between bands at the time. And so she said, well, you know all the words. So you'll be the one of the singers and we'll get two other singers and we'll get the charts and then we're going to do the show. Now, I might tell you that before that, other people had asked me to sing, people who are famous, and I was always like, nah, I have to do my hair, because I was so terrified of the challenge. Mm. But here, Melissa just put it to me to say, you're going to do this, and we're going to have some fun.
Yeah.
And I found that clip too, by the way. If you go,
We'll have to share with our listeners the ad and the other clip.
Amazing, yeah,
yeah,
amazing. So it was called Live Wednesday, and we sang two songs. And I had never been a real background singer. I had done recording. I had been in the studio before, and I had sung on some of her albums, and I had sung jingles for Stephen, but not being on a stage with big audience. And that was fabulous. So that happened. And that was that. But then Melissa's song, Don't Cry Out Loud, became a monster hit. And she got invitations from a hotel, different hotels, to do a show with an orchestra and singers. So my husband was hired to be her musical director because Stephen actually, parenthetically, when we got married, Melissa was a teenager and she used to sit in the living room and play her guitar and her sweet little Joan Baez songs. Mm-hmm. Stephen was doing jingles and he thought, we can make some money together because she can sing. So he was the first one to bring her into the studio and sing jingles. And one of the jingles, he turned into a single and was recorded. And that was her first single. It was called Beautiful People. It was a commercial for Coppertone.
I feel like your life, you've always been surrounded by creatives. You're a creative.
Always.
Like, how do you find that community? Or it just comes to you?
It just came to me because you know what? Always be ready.
That's a good tip.
And also, I had to learn. We had a friend when we moved here. She was an executive with BMI, which is a Broadcast Music Incorporated, which is a licensing organization. Stephen had worked for them since he was 21 years old in New York. And she said, "You must live in the wonderful world of yes."
Wow. Yeah.
And that was pretty much my mom's mantra, too. You know, my mom was a gorgeous, dynamic, talented redhead. She was a redhead until she died at 93. If I went to see her in the senior center and I said, "Mom, you need some color." And she would say, 103 was the color that she used.
That's so funny.
She was extraordinary. And that was her word, extraordinary. Yeah.
So my question is, what's your one word that you would correlate, I guess, with creativity?
I wrote down three words for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The first word is heritage. Mm-hmm. And this life of mine is my heritage. You know, my grandfather played the cornet in John Philip Sousa's band. Now, John Philip Sousa was a composer who wrote some of the most famous American marches of all time. And I'm not going to get up, but on a shelf behind me, when he passed away, Pop had his cornet, and Mom had it all taken apart and had different parts engraved Leo Manchester with his birth and death. You know, so that was part of my destiny. Grandma wanted to be an opera singer, but she couldn't do that because she had four children. But there it was, right? Mom wanted to be an actress, and she went for an audition with a very famous director. And when she said, she was 16, and she said, "How much will this pay?" It was a summer stock job. And he said, "Nothing." And she said, "I can't take this. I have to have money for my family." And Pop, the black sheep, he had three sisters who were civil servants, and they were much older than he. And when he decided when he was 15 that he chose the bassoon because he had a cousin who played the bassoon, it was the only instrument left at the Theodore Roosevelt High School Orchestra. And then he got into the Armed Forces Band, and you see him in the newsreels playing bassoon at the front of the orchestra. That was his destiny, right? And so we inherited, Melissa and I, this destiny to do what was in our heart and never give up. Even when it feels like you're going to give up.
Yeah.
You know, Melissa chose an impossible career and she never gave up. And she is successful 50 years later, and she just became a grandmother. I'm a great aunt for the first time in my life. The huge blessing of our lives. And my nephew, Nathan, is a vice president at a big talent agency. So the destiny goes on to future generations. And my daughters both work in this business. One daughter, Emily, she is in the music business, works for a company that is a label support company called Label Logic, and she also books podcasts. She learned how to be a talent producer because it's the family business.
Yeah.
And Amanda has had her own PR company for over 20 years. And she has represented some of the biggest bands and musicians in the business. And they're wonderful girls, and they're wonderful women, and they're my heart. And we go everywhere together. We're like the three musketeers. Mm-hmm. I grew up with them, so they're my heart and soul, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, and Stephen had a good life, and he did a lot of wonderful things and conducted for brilliant divas, and then he got sick. But his music stays forever. And we listen to it all the time. And this is our destiny. And the last word that I will give you, which is most important to me, is gratitude. I am grateful for every day. I am grateful for the people in my life who give me strength and courage. I'm grateful for friends and family. Family is everything. And some friends become family. And never, ever give up. You know, when I was freelancing before I came back to ET after Arsenio busted, that was very sad, Lori. Mm-hmm. That was very sad. That was a watershed moment in my mind to realize that here was Arsenio was so brilliant and so historic. What he did for Late Night and what he did for the community. That show that we did, well, you weren't there. In the first run, we did a show the night that the riots happened in Los Angeles.
Wow.
They locked the gates at Paramount Studios and we drove our cars onto the lot and we did a show and we brought people up from the First AME Church in school buses to fill our audience. And some of our guests, including Sean Penn and Meshach Taylor and other people who had planned to be there, came anyway, and the mayor. And we did a show because Arsenio wanted to show that we were okay and we would be okay. We just have to be smart and wise and safe. And then, so when he called me to come back, I thought, I have to do this because I can't have regrets. Just like Nanny Dora said to Stephen when we moved here, no regrets. And then when it was disappointingly non-viewed, shall we say, that was a very disappointing time.
Yeah.
And, but it was meant to be.
Yeah.
It wasn't meant to be.
That's the thing is, like, with creativity and ideas and as you coin it, destiny, our destiny and our paths cross and go in all sorts of ways. And I guess just kind of like our listeners, the one thing that I really gain from you, Claudia, is just keep going, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's in your destiny where you're meant to be, and just show up for it and be ready, like you said. And
always be ready.
Always be ready. And that ties up our Limitless podcast with amazing Claudia. Thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. And good luck with the podcast.